Blog Talk Radio.
His truth is marching on. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, good Monday morning here on the cross in the desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy Noble. That's a lot of good mornings. I don't know how that came out. It's good to be here on the Monday morning edition of the cross in the desert. Have a very exciting program for you today. In the first half, we're going to deal with the very controversial indoctrination, infiltration of Islamic teachings in the public schools. Now, let me explain something to you here. I have many friends that are Muslims, but I feel the need to educate us about what I perceive to be an agenda that is going on. There are so many of these cases, and this is not about Islamophobia or anything else. These are legitimate cases where it appears that the teachings of Islam, not the historical understanding. There's nothing wrong with talking about the historical background, but I'm referring to the actual teachings, prayers, etc., that are going on in public schools. We are a nation, remember, that prides itself in the so-called separation of church and state, which I have a problem with that interpretation, but nonetheless, that is supposedly our constitutional protection, and yet we are seeing Islamic teachings going on in the school when Christians are not allowed, in some cases, to bring a Bible or to pray or do anything. They are shunned and reminded of this clause of separation of church and state. And yet, in spite of that, we are seeing many cases in Florida and across the nation of Islamic teachings going on in the school. So we're going to deal with this subject today on several sound bites. I want you to hear some of these cases. And this is not about conspiracy or hysteria. I want you to judge for yourself. We are going to investigate this very important topic because, again, the number one thing I want to point out to on the cross in the desert is that we as Americans must protect our freedoms 24/7. And there is a movement afoot about bringing Sharia law into this land. challenging our constitutional rights. And so I think as Christians, we need to stand up and protect our freedoms and speak out. That's why this program is here. It is about Iran. It is about my Iranian friends, but it is also about our freedoms, lest our nation become like nations like Iran, where our freedoms and our representations and our voices are suddenly silenced because of our lethargicness and not standing up for our freedoms. Well, that's a lot to say. We're going to talk about that today on The Cross in the Desert. A programming note for you. Usually my program is Monday and Thursday. This Thursday there will not be a program, and let me explain why. I am busy preparing for a very, very intimate special tribute to Rehane Jabari this Sunday. This Sunday is the 1 year anniversary of her tragic execution. And I have put together a program, and I'm still putting it together, as a matter of fact. But I am putting together a program for this Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Now, in Iran, it's going to be different. 9:30 here means that in Iran it's 7 p.m., so most of the day is already spent. I couldn't do it any other way. I would have loved to have done it just at the right time. The time would have been dawn when Rehane was executed, but I could not pull that off. I wish I could have, to be absolutely accurate. But nonetheless, it's a very special Sunday program. One of my guests will be Annie Cyrus, and she will join. She will be joined by a new friend of mine, Mina Nafesi, and she has a specific radio program. She's a host of an Iranian radio program in Los Angeles. And on this day, we're going to talk about Rehane with other Iranians, and we're going to also be reading the tributes written about Rehane and the program. Also, my good friend, Payman Ace, that will be calling in from Malaysia, and she has some words of encouragement and insight on this very difficult day for Sholeh and her family. Sholeh is Rehane's mom. I wanted to tell you what she's going to do on that day. She has been so busy preparing her home for many, many guests. Lots of cleaning, lots of hard work going on. But on this day, besides having this gathering to remember Rehane, do you know what Sholeh is doing? It's amazing. She's such an incredible and beautiful woman. She is going to take some food and money to the prisoners. And also she's going to the animal shelter to feed some of the animals in Iran, because Rehane loved animals. And so she's doing this as part of the day, as her tribute to her daughter. And I wanted to mention that because it's such a beautiful, beautiful gesture. I cannot imagine the grief that she's going through. So I would just ask all of you, as my listeners, please keep Sholeh and her family in prayer. This Sunday is a heart-wrenching day. And I'm going to try to do a specific radio program to bring some hope and healing to Rehane, her family, her mother, her sisters. So please join me if you can this Sunday. If you can't join me live, please listen to the radio rebroadcast. It will be an incredibly special day as we remember Rehane Jabari. I also wanted to mention a very special guest having today is Annie Cyrus from the Glazov Gang. Do you know what she's doing right now? She is actually being interviewed on the Laura Ingraham program. Wow, she is a busy lady today, but she will join me in the next 20 minutes. And we're going to talk about a specific petition that she has sent out to all of her followers concerning the Iran nuclear deal. You don't want to miss that. It's going to be very, very special. Right now, I want to tackle this subject about Islamic teaching in public schools. And the first soundbite we're going to listen to is a case in Los Angeles. Let's listen to it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
Well, Jaron Micah, these parents tell me that they have no trouble with their son learning the history about any religion. It's when the school starts teaching him the faith.
The audacity of this school to think they can sit these children down and teach them whatever religion they please. It's preposterous.
Some Manhattan Beach Middle School parents feel the school has crossed the line.
This is it's illegal, basically. Mm-hmm. You can't teach religion in schools anymore, but apparently that, in this particular school at least, that's not the case.
They say they recently discovered their son's homework assignments on Islam were more about actually learning the faith than the history. One question asked him to write down teachings from the Quran.
What I saw written in these bubbles was the one true God, Allah, in one of the bubbles, and one of the other bubbles was all people must submit to Allah in another bubble. Now I turn the page over and I see the five pillars of Islam.
One of the five pillars he had to learn.
Shahada is the testimony of a faithful Muslim that Allah is the one true God.
It shouldn't be presented to them. They shouldn't be asked to know this.
They say the students should be taught the history behind religions, be it Judaism, Buddhism, Christianity, etc., just not the actual faith.
Can you imagine the outcry all over this country if children were bringing home paperwork that asked them to write down John 3:16 or asked them to write down the Ten Commandments?
And if it ended with the declaration of faith, Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. That's what the equivalent. I mean, part of us, for our son, yeah, we'd be happy about that. But we understand,
but
we're
some
fair.
Other parents may
right,
not
we're
be.
Reasonable people. We understand that doesn't belong in the school, in a public school.
And these parents tell me that they have met with the principal, but because nothing, at least in the near future, is going to change, they are going to pull their son out of that class. Now, we have also reached out to the school and left them a message, but at this point haven't heard back yet. For now, reporting live in Manhattan Beach, Mary Beth McDade, we'll send it back to you in the studio.
There is a fine line between learning the historical significance of any religion. I don't think you and I have a problem with that. Anything that's part of history, teaching our children history, not revisionist history, but history is important. Cross the line from historical understanding to indoctrination. Now you're teaching the faith. Now you're talking about the one true God, Allah. Now you're talking about the actual teachings in relationship to prayer. That crosses the line. So I would say that there is some real problems with this that I don't think Christians are panicking. They need to be vocal about this and speak out. This is not allowed. If Christians cannot openly share their faith in the public classrooms and talk about their faith in a specific way other than the history, then neither should Islam. It's just that clear. So to me, there is an agenda afoot. And I want to talk to you now about how this kind of all began, a little bit of a historical perspective. And I want you to hear this very important soundbite on Islamic faith in public schools and how this trend began and what connections it may have to the White House. Let's listen right now on the cross in the desert.
Interestingly enough, in recent years, American public schools have been indoctrinated with the Muslim religion.
Public schools across America are under siege by radical Islam.
Studies have shown over 500 historical errors in public school textbooks, giving an Islamic slant to our youth. As a result, our youth are subject to the following teachings: learning to become a Muslim, fasting for Ramadan, learning the five pillars of Islam, memorize verses of the Quran, adopt a Muslim name, stage a jihad, war against non-Muslims. Well, how did this happen? The ACLU, the American Muslim Council, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and the Clinton administration joined together and made a clause that opened the door to Muslim teachings while attacking anyone who speaks of the Christian religion in public schools.
The high school has had Ten Commandment plaques in every classroom, but new tonight, the district has decided it's time to take them down.
Hence, you see the courts backing the Muslim agenda when, for example, a school in California is teaching their students a three-week course, which essentially requires them to become a Muslim for that period of time. This also very well explains why my ministry has been under incessant attack for bringing a moral and constitutional message to public schools in our country. And to prove my point, a representative from the American Muslim Council, Abdul Rahman Alamoudi, today serves a 23-year prison sentence for being one of the top fundraisers of Al-Qaeda in the United States of America. In addition, there are over 225 Muslim schools in the United States and around 50,000 children who are being taught to, and I quote Brigitte Gabriel with Act for America, foster an environment of hate, loathing and resentment towards Western culture, Christians, Jews, Shiites, secular Muslims, and non-Muslims. America, why is this happening? In a nation that was founded upon Christian principles, whose students were nurtured in a biblical worldview, could it be that Christians became apathetic, went to sleep, and allowed this radical agenda to creep in unnoticed by the public at large? Muslim infiltration into the universities? Saudis have taken advantage of the Title VI program that our government implemented after World War II for the education of young Americans about foreign cultures and languages. How? Well, they are using their riches from oil to pump millions of dollars into America's universities to appoint Arab professors in departments such as political science, Middle East study.
One of the things that I really love is that I get to teach what I love to teach. So in addition to teaching American literature and world literature, I've also had the wonderful opportunity to develop courses like Arab women writers and Arab and Islamic feminism.
So on and so forth, who are brainwashing our students with an anti-American point of view. They teach that we are the problem, that our foreign policy is the problem, that our wealth, enlightenment, and success are oppressing the rest of the world. And this explains why Obama is apologizing to other nations. This is why he is targeting the youth vote after this anti-American curriculum is sneaking its way into the schools in America. This is also why the American Civil Liberties Union quickly represents Muslims while refusing to defend Christians who practice their faith in public schools. But friends, the good news is you've never lost your right.
It's shocking and eye-opening, and when you listen very carefully to the agenda and to what is happening and to how Christians are not allowed to post the Ten Commandments, of course, there's a firestorm and a controversy, and of course, the first people to appear on any program across the nation is the ACLU. They're going to defend the rights that schools and religion are separate, et cetera, et cetera, and yet it seems like there is a deaf ear and a blind eye turned to the Muslim agenda. That certainly seems to be the case right now. Well, we have more examples right here on the cross in the desert, just not two. This is not an isolated case here and there. Also in Florida, there is a challenge to this separation of church and state clause, again, with now teaching kids not the history, but Islamic prayers. Let's listen.
New controversy tonight over what students are being taught in school. A Florida father angry over his son's lessons, saying they are too focused on the Islamic religion. And when the school spokesman was questioned about it, well, wait till you see what he did. Trace Gallagher has the story. Trace?
Megan, Ron Wagner is simply asking that his son's school be fair and balanced. In other words, if you teach Islam, you should give equal time to other religions. The debate is in Seminole County, Florida, just outside Orlando, where Mr. Wagner complained about a world history assignment on Islam. Listen.
We are requiring our kids in our public schools to learn Islamic prayers and what would be the equivalent of the Jewish and the Christian Ten Commandments, something called the Five Pillars of Islam.
Reciting the first pillar requires students to say there is no true God but Allah, and Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. The school told the Wagners that the pillars of Islam are benchmarks in state curriculum, yet the class had no discussion about Christianity or Judaism, because those religions, the school says, are taught in earlier grades, and by the way, the first 100 pages of the textbook dealing with those religions are missing. The district blames a manufacturing defect. When an Orlando TV reporter asked the school about the apparent lack of balance, it didn't go well. Listen.
I resent your tone, first of all. Secondly, and the way it's being asked in an accusatory way.
This, by the way, is the same textbook that dozens of other Central Florida parents protested 15 months ago. At least then, the book had all of the pages. But there were still only passing references to Christianity and other religions. The protests went nowhere, and the book remained. But now, the Seminole County School District will reconsider the book when the contract is up in 3 years. By the way, the Council on American Islamic Relations believes that parents are overreacting to these books. Megan.
Trace, good to see you.
Yes, that will always be the way to silence the critics that you're overreacting, that you think this is part of the conspiracy, that you have no right to speak up because all we're doing is educating kids. Well, no, education is one thing. I think we all agree there's nothing wrong with good, solid historical education. But this is not education. It's called indoctrination. A big difference. We can use the word infiltration because we can see that there is a history to this, that there's an agenda to this, and then there is indoctrination. And yes, parents should be enraged and should show the double standard. If Christians are not allowed to openly proclaim and learn their faith at school because of the so-called separation of church and state, then neither should any other religion be allowed the same free access. And they have every right to speak up. Well, did you know one of our military, a Marine, was banned from her daughter's school, his daughter's school, I should say, simply because of objecting to some homework assignments? You want to hear this special report right now on the cross in the desert.
As we begin tonight in Charles County, Maryland, where a couple is furious with their child's high school. A father and military veteran says he's been banned from La Plata High School because he got into an argument with the faculty over his child's homework assignment. Tom Fitzgerald is live in La Plata with the story, which is new at 5. Tom.
Well, Tony, Kevin Wood received his ban from the high school in La Plata here today. This all stems from an assignment he objected to that his daughter received, asking her to list the benefits of Islam. Both the school system and the parents are talking tonight about this assignment, and they have very different versions about what happened next.
A lot of people do not understand where my husband is coming from.
Melissa Wood says her husband, Kevin, a U.S. Marine and Iraq veteran, is the most patriotic person she's ever met. But now he is banned from even stepping foot near their daughter's high school. We talked by phone.
I don't force my religious views on them, so don't force your religious views on me.
This all started when their 11th grader came home from La Plata High School with this three-page assignment. It asked for explanations of Islam's five pillars, Mecca and Muhammad. Kevin and Melissa didn't like it. They feel religion should not be taught in public schools and say Islam should not get priority over Judaism or Christianity.
We cannot discuss our Ten Commandments at school, but they can discuss Islam's five pillars.
Kevin went to the school to talk to the vice principal. Things got heated, and Kevin wound up getting slapped with this notice banning him from school property.
He was threatening to cause a disruption or possible disruption at the school. We're not teaching religion. We're teaching world history.
None of these parents knew about it. They didn't tell anybody.
For now, the Woods and school officials are talking about the dispute and hope to come to a resolution. Melissa, the hardest lesson of all has been hearing her husband described as something she says she knows he is not.
They're making him sound like he's some bad person. He's no bad person. He fought for your country.
It's amazing. Here's a man that has stood up for our freedoms and has put his life on the line going to Iraq. And all he did was question a homework assignment, the content of it, which parents should be involved in their children's education. They should go to every parent-teacher conference and meeting and examine the textbooks. I know that my father-in-law did this with Becky. He would ask to see what she is being taught. He would look over the textbooks. What a man he was. And these are the same things that should be happening today with us. And when we implement expression to look over the homework, to look over the textbooks, and we question what is going on, this is how we are treated. And instead of answering this man's questions, they just whitewashed him. They blackballed him. They did a character assassination on him. They call him an extremist, an alarmist, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, this is a veteran who fought for the freedoms that you and me enjoy every day. This is a tragedy. Well, when you listen to stories like this, you ask yourself a couple of questions. What about the president, the man in the White House? Is there any connection whatsoever to what's going on in our public schools, what's going on in the world scene? Does there exist any connection? Well, I want you to hear this very special report from Western Journalism on the White House ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Let's listen.
The left has charged conservative members of Congress with McCarthyism for noting the seeming influence of the Muslim Brotherhood on the Obama administration. Even though Huma Abedin, privy to top-secret information as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's Deputy Chief of Staff, has deep ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. She was on the board of directors of the Muslim Students Association from 1997 to 1999 while attending college at George Washington University. The MSA was designated as a Muslim Brotherhood front group in the Holy Land Foundation case. None other than American-born terrorist Anwar el-Awlaki became the spiritual advisor to the MSA shortly after Abedin left to join another Muslim Brotherhood front group, the Journal of Muslim Minority Affairs. Abedin would share the board of directors table with terrorist-linked Abdullah Omar Nassif, who had meetings with none other than Osama bin Laden. But this is all conspiracy theory from right-wing extremists, right? Nothing but a McCarthyite witch hunt?
Are you now? Have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Not according to the mainstream Egyptian newspaper Rose El Youssef, in an article published on December 22nd, entitled "A Man and Six of the Brotherhood in the White House." The article begins with the words "Not Huma Abedin alone," and goes on to list a hit parade of Muslim Brotherhood plants. Arif Ali Khan, Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Policy Development. Mohammed Eli Biari, a member of the Homeland Security Advisory Council. Rashad Hussein, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Organization of the Islamic Conference. Salam El-Marayati, co-founder of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Eboo Patel, member of President Obama's Advisory Council on Faith-Based Neighborhood Partnerships. And last but not least in the Muslim Brotherhood hit parade, Imam Mohammed Magid, President of the Islamic Society of North America. ISNA was found to be a co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation case for funneling millions of dollars to Hamas. Our president, Barack Obama, invited this man to the iftar dinner, giving him the place of honor normally reserved for heads of state. No, America, it is not a conspiracy theory that the Muslim Brotherhood has infiltrated the Obama administration. And it is not a conspiracy theory that the man sitting in the Oval Office, Barack Hussein Obama, has embraced this infiltration and is therefore a traitor.
A hard-hitting report from Western journalism, and there's a lot of facts on the table here. I know it goes by very, very quickly. Sorry about that. A lot of facts there that go by extremely fast, but again, you get the gist that there is an agenda afoot, that there are ties that you can see it goes to the highest level. We're going to finish this special report right now with some more information and facts for you to consider.
On November 23, 2008, Mohammed Eli Biari had coffee with longtime friend, Holy Land Foundation President Shukri Abu Bakr. The next day, Bakr was convicted of funneling at least $12 million through the Muslim Brotherhood front group, the Holy Land Foundation, to their terrorist wing, Hamas. Bakr is currently serving a 65-year sentence in federal prison. Mohammed Eli Biari, a de facto member of the Muslim Brotherhood, whose donations to the Holy Land Foundation found their way into the coffers of Hamas, still supports his terrorist-in-arms, Shukri Abu Bakr. But Eli Biari no longer offers his support for Bakr in the form of informal meetings over coffee, but shockingly does so from his office inside the Obama administration. Eli Biari, whose contacts with jihadist groups run long and deep, was appointed to Barack Obama's Homeland Security Council in October of 2010. And on September 12, 2013, the day after Americans remembered those murdered by the Muslim Brotherhood-connected terrorist group Al-Qaeda, Barack Obama promoted Mohammed Eli Biari to head the Homeland Security Council. This is the same year Eli Biari proclaimed in an open letter that his terrorist-in-arms, Shukri Abu Bakr, was railroaded by the government. The Department of Homeland Security is tasked with protecting Americans from harm, chiefly from terrorists like the Muslim Brotherhood group Al-Qaeda. But Eli Biari has done everything he can to undermine this mandate. According to the just-published 40-page analysis, A Window on the Muslim Brotherhood in America, by Ryan Morrow, Eli Biari in fact wrote the guidelines that make it virtually impossible for federal or state law enforcement to investigate the Muslim Brotherhood's front groups. Groups like the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, the Muslim Students Association, or the literally dozens of other Muslim Brotherhood groups, all named as Muslim Brotherhood co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation case, all still allowed to operate with impunity under the Obama administration. Either Barack Obama is totally ignorant that a Muslim Brotherhood member is sitting in the White House, or more shockingly, he is aware of it, making Barack Hussein Obama likely a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. This bolsters the now viral story in Egyptian media that Barack Obama is in fact a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that he shockingly bribed former Muslim Brotherhood President Mohamed Morsi to the tune of $8 billion to guarantee that the huge tract of land, the Sinai Peninsula, be turned over to the terrorist group Hamas. Why the Sinai Peninsula? Presumably for the purpose of putting Israel in an indefensible position, guaranteeing their annihilation. If true, that Barack Hussein Obama is in fact a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, impeachment proceedings must begin immediately.
This is shocking and eye-opening, and a lot more can be said about this, but I have a very, very special guest today. Her name is Annie Cyrus. She is the producer, editor of the Glass Off Gang and her own series called The Unknown, and she has been gracious to join me today on The Cross in the Desert. I want to welcome you, Annie Cyrus, to The Cross in the Desert. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Randy. How are you doing?
Fine. Well, you have been quite the busy lady this morning. You just had a very important interview with Laura Ingraham.
Yes, it was an interesting one.
Well, good. I'm so glad that you took the time out to join us. Well, Annie, you were on my program about 2 weeks ago, and it was such a very powerful program because it's dealing with a topic that all of us have to face head on. And I just finished the last half an hour of my program talking about the Islamic indoctrination and infiltration into the public school systems. And you are a producer-editor of the Glassoff Gang and The Unknown. And these programs are extremely educational to us to learn how to identify how our freedoms are being infiltrated by religious groups like Muslims.
Well, thank you. Yes, I would say definitely. That's why I keep asking most of people to stop watching our media, because nothing truth is coming out of it, and try to go into more of channels like Glassoff Gang to get real and truth information out of it. What it is
you
that...
I was going to say, ahead. You offer an alternative to the mainstream media, which doesn't report the truth.
Yes. Pretty much we do that, because here's what it is. I might even get a lashback on what I'm about to say, but truth be told, None of our media sources right now, left or right or center, doesn't matter. None of them are saying it as it is. They're either twisting it, they're either turning it, or they're buttering it up. And this matter is way more scary than anyone is realizing out there, because if they're listening to our media, they're not getting the real truth of danger we're facing.
And it's very important for us as Americans to protect our freedoms. Our nation owes its freedoms not only to our military, but to our founding fathers, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. And we are literally, Annie, in a fight to protect our freedoms. Tell me and inform us what is not being told out there, what is not being said that we need to know.
Well, the main thing that I repeatedly say is that we all need to know Islam is not a religion. They are telling us Islam is just another religion. No, it is not. And the second most important is Islam cannot coexist with anything other than Islam. These two main parts, if we can understand these two parts, we can fight. But as long as we're sitting there thinking Islam is a religion and Islam could coexist with especially the constitution of this country, we are blind to the danger.
Now, I've heard Jamie actually say exactly what you said, that he categorizes Islam as a specific ideology. There's a big difference, isn't there?
Absolutely. It's okay. If I was about to say, off my experience, the way I was forced under Islam, I would say Islam is more of a, let me find the right word, you know, I sometimes struggle with the pronunciation of the things, but it's like a dictatorship,
mm-hmm.
is what I would say. It's Islam equals control and power, control and power. Now, a lot of people debate me saying, well, you know, every government is about control and power. No. Islam is control and power over everything, including a fly on the street, needs to be controlled under Islam.
That is a very important point, because there's a difference between our constitution that empowers people. It's power to the people. Islam is not power to the people. It's theocracy. It is all to Allah. Every single action, every single thought is under the supervision and control of Allah, whereas a constitutional republic, we give power to the people so they have freedom and voice.
All right, Randy, I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I was going to say to you, there is a difference between Islam and the United States. Basically, Islam is theocracy, control and power, whereas the United States is a constitutional republic where it's power to the people. The people are empowered.
Exactly. That's why our people, our fellow Americans, need to realize that Islam, not only it's not a religion, it's an actual force against people. Here, somebody asked me that, and I'm like, okay, I'm not an expert when it comes to any other religion. I know a little bit of Christianity, but I know one huge thing that you might convince you. Islam says a human is a slave to God, and Christianity says a human is a free human. Just keep that in mind. At all times, Islam consider a person as a slave to God.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important distinction.
Which gives the power to the leader by Quran and Hadith, an imam or a leader of Islamic country, Islamic community, has the power to control the mind and the body of that person in any shape and form, suiting Islamic rules or Sharia law.
Well, this is important what you brought up, because in the Christian teaching, Annie, human beings are called sons and daughters of God, a family relationship. There's a relationship. The difference is very simple. In Islam, as you pointed out, it's slavery mentality. In Christianity, there is freedom, and Christians are called sons and daughters of God. There's a big difference. Now, one of the points you're bringing up is about men. In Islam, in the Hadith, Muhammad is quoted as saying very simply, and you knew this living in Iran, if any man change their religion, it's a command.
Yes. Well, because I was just mentioning that on Laura's show, that by Quran, any human being born is Muhammadian, which equals Muslim. Now, when you're Muslim by birth, you're a Muslim by birth. So if you change your religion, means you denounce Islam. And the punish for that is death. So there is no freedom, no.
Absolutely. And you experienced this firsthand. I remember we talked about this in our first interview, but for the benefit of those that didn't hear this, when you were in Iran, you were under the control of the government, because there's no difference between the government and the Quran. It's all one.
Everything is, I'm sorry, I lost you again. In Iran, what is it?
In Iran, you were under the control of the government, because there is no distinction between the Quran and the government. There's no separation of church and state.
Absolutely not. Everything, when you look at the Islamic Republic of Iran's constitution, the very top, the title highlighted in a big font says, this constitution is Islamic based on Sharia law and Quran.
Mm-hmm.
As clear as that. The only thing, as I explained on one of my question and answers, question and answer videos, is that now every punishment comes from Quran, but the harshness of it comes from the leader of the country. So let's say adultery is punishable by death. Now, how comes from the leader, which in Iran they do the stoning, which apparently, starting 5 years ago, they're trying to do less of stoning and more hanging. But the format of punishment comes from the leader, but the actual punishment comes from Quran. If you're not wearing a proper hijab, you're supposed to be lashed by Quran. Now, the leaders decide how many lashes you get. But the actual base of the punishment comes from Quran.
It is very sad. I'm thinking of the increase of execution since Rouhani has become president. Over 2,000 more have been executed, and it just continues to escalate. And then you mentioned about the woman caught in adultery, and you know, as living in Iran, that polygamy and temporary marriages are permitted for men in Iran. They're allowed to have 4 wives, but women can't have that. The rules are so drastically different for women in Iran compared to men. Isn't that true?
Well, pretty much there is zero right for
mm-hmm.
women. Exactly
mm-hmm.
zero. Like, to the point that if let's put it this way, the one thing that I always say that shocks most of my American friends is that when a woman gives birth, in order to get the birth certificate, the father has to approve of everything, including the name of the child. He's the one who signed the paper. A mother cannot sign the papers of birth certificate for her own child. This is as low as it gets.
Now, I wanted to bring to the attention of our listeners, this is very important. You have recently sent out a very clear petition dealing with this nuclear deal, with which we sadly are implementing right now with Iran. President Obama has signed for relief sanctions for Iran with the provision that they are good and obedient. But you have a petition out that is being addressed to Dr. Benjamin Carson, Donald Trump, Senator Cruz, and some others. And it deals with the nuclear deal. And this is so well written and worded. I just want to know if I can take just a minute to read, and I'll have you comment on this. It begins, in regards to the Iranian nuclear deal, I would like to ask President Obama why he did not consult the citizens of this great country, the United States, who have actually endured and experienced daily life in Iran. I would like to know why the president has ignored that Iran is run by Sharia law, which is inhumane, barbaric, and enforces unequal rights for women. Does President Obama know or care that under Sharia law, a woman's voice is only worth half that of a man's voice? And then, does President Obama know that a husband is allowed to beat his wife, that he can have up to 4 wives? Does President Obama know that if a girl or woman is raped, it is her fault, not the rapist, and if she tells anyone, she will receive public lashings? And the list goes on, and the petition says Sharia law has no place in a civilized world, and for President Obama to facilitate the Islamic country of Iran to acquire nuclear weapons is also facilitate handing over all women's rights and lives into the arms of Sharia law. Now, there are other things here, but Annie, this is a very important petition that you've sent out to all of us, and you've so far acquired over 500 signatures. But talk to us about this petition, because this is very important that people sign this and speak out as a free country against this.
Absolutely. The reason I obviously did the petition is, one, it's very close to me. This matter is very close to me because not only Obama is giving way too much power to the government of Iran, whom are torturing and killing people over there. I don't want to necessarily say my people. They're all human. We're all human. But at some point, right. Yes, it becomes my people, and I would like to stand for them. Now I have the freedom to fight for them. I will do so. But one major thing is that by doing so, he is giving so much credit, and he's agreeing with Sharia law, which he's also bringing to the United States. So if we can stop this and hold him responsible, not only we help people in Iran, we also help ourselves here because he won't be able to continue bringing Sharia law here. We won't lose our freedom when we stop him from doing what he's doing. As I always say, a lot of people say, what's your plan for this fight? And I say, forget about getting on the street and killing all Muslims. We don't want to start a bloodbath. But we need to take the source down, and the source is Obama. Obama needs to be held responsible, and he needs to be taken down, and he needs to go to trial for treason. Because to my eyes, he is nothing but a traitor to this country and human society.
Yes, and Annie, what you're saying, before you came on the program, I was playing something from Western Journalism as a source about the Muslim Brotherhood ties to the White House, how key people in Homeland Security are Muslim Brotherhood affiliates and those that are sympathetic to the cause. And also we talked about the infiltration into public schools. And then recently we have Syrian refugees, which most of them are men, and we don't know how many of them are ISIS members or affiliated with ISIS. He wants over 200,000 of them to be allowed to come into our country. So this petition and what you're saying is very important for our freedom and the future of our country.
Absolutely. And as far as this Syrian refugees, I can tell you easily, without even seeing any of them, one out of three is ISIS member. The reason for saying that is not just because I'm angry at them. No. Let's take a look at numbers. Let's see the population of Syria and see how many of them are actual Muslims. And that's going to give us answer. There is no way all these people are against Islam and they're trying to come here for freedom. There is no way. Because majority of the population, there are actual extremist radical Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
That should make it easier for them to make a decision. And then other thing, I was actually having this conversation with a very good friend of mine last night that, okay, you're sending them all in without any screening. You're just taking them in. Okay, why don't you take them in, put them in some sort of camp, go through the screening, go through interviews, and have experts like Nani Darwish, like Robert Spencer, like myself, come and do the interview because we can spot a Muslim. We can spot them from just the body language.
Mm-hmm.
Bring them in, do the interview, and then release them on our street. You're just letting them in. As you said, majority are the men. Okay, where are your wives? Where are your mothers? Where are your children? You just came here to rescue yourself. What kind of human are you? But no, that's not the plan. That's the thing. Agenda of Obama is not to save them. It's to destroy us. That's what I will repeat until my fellow Americans hear me. Obama is here to destroy us. And no, I'm not paranoid. I am realistic. I have seen all this. I have seen Obama was giving a speech on Islam is a part of America. And he was very, very solid on it, saying, let there be no doubt. Okay, I will tell you what. I've seen this of every single imam and mullah in Iran. His body language talks about destroying the civilization of this country. So get up, people. Stop him. You don't need to go kill other people. Just stop him. Take the power off his hand, and we are going to be just fine.
I like what you're saying to me because you're not an alarmist to me, and you're not being paranoid. You have experienced this firsthand by living in Iran, you know how to spot these things. You understand what this looks like in Iran, and you're saying, and listen to yourself, Annie, we have Americans that are so lethargic, American citizens. You are an American citizen from Iran, and you are sounding the alarm. You are doing what most Americans themselves should be doing. And this is why I appreciate you so much, because being a former Iranian that is now an American citizen, you are speaking out for our freedoms, and you're doing more than our own citizens, and I appreciate that so much, because you're trying to protect us, you're trying to care for us, because you love this country. And why aren't enough Americans sounding the alarm like you?
Because they are being lied to. They are all being lied to. There are so much misleading and misinformation out there. Again, I had this conversation saying, you go to, a lot of people try to get informed. So they go to Google and do a lot of search. What they don't realize, as a friend of mine said, is that search engine optimization is not the way you should do it, because here's the thing. If I was a rich person, I would pay Google, and they would put what I said on the very first top link. There's no reliable information anymore. We need to go to source. Again, myself, I have lived it. I have the knowledge. I have the experience. And I have nothing to gain by telling this except losing a lot. As you know, I'm putting myself out there as a target by speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind it. I do it in a heartbeat again and again and again. But the point is, our people are going to wrong information. They are misinforming themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to CNN, listening to a lot of YouTube videos, going to a lot of articles and links online, Googling, these are not good information. Today, here's what our media is trying to do to us. They are trying to confuse us so much that we won't be able to make an educated decision. As I said on my last video, is the reason I say, a lot of people ask me, Randy, why is it so important for you to educate us right now? I'm saying because the best decision is an educated decision.
Right.
When you know what you're dealing with, you can make a good decision. Right now, even on an election, a lot of people don't have the educated decision because everything we are being told is not the truth. Just like how Obama got his vote. He lied. He lied and he lied and he lied, and a lot of people believed it. Now, we just need to stop believing and start digging deeper for information. We need to compare information. Why would he say that? Why would she say that? You know, compare what I say. Exactly day after Obama said, let it be no doubt, Islam is a part of America. I came out and said, guess what? Islam cannot coexist. So what he means is
right.
America is part of Islam. A lot of my fellow Americans attacked me on that, saying, there is no way this – I get it. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to believe that one day this country will become an Islamic country. But talk to people in Australia. Talk to people in UK. Talk to people in Germany. Talk to people in Iran. You know, Randy, when Shah was in Iran, I'm not saying it was a perfect country. No. However, no one ever imagined Iran, a mini America, is going to become an Islamic Republic. But guess what? It happened. 37 years ago, and for the last 37 years, everybody's trying to get rid of them, and they can't. It got so out of control. They are one of the most powerful Islamic countries right now. Almost a lot of countries are scared of them. So
yes, what you're bringing up.
Forget about. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you. 37 years ago, the Shah, of course, wasn't perfect. There were some problems under his monarchy. But the point is, when you compare the Shah's monarchy to the Islamic State of Iran, there's no comparison. There's death and murder. There's no freedom. Annie, I just wanted to ask you, did you ever believe, coming to America, that you would have to put up a fight like this? Because you're told about America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, where we can realize all of our hopes and dreams, and now you find yourself fighting for freedom almost like you did in Iran. Does that surprise you?
When I came here, I never imagined, no. However, as I have five witnesses, the day Obama was elected, I stood up and I said, we're going to have a jihad in America.
Wow.
That's when I prepared myself. That day I knew we were going to have a jihad. I knew it. That's why I'm kind of, to a lot of people, they ask me, like, you make your videos and you seem so calm and planned. I'm like, because I was preparing for today. I just wish more of my fellow Americans would listen and get prepared just like I did. The problem is we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. You mentioned a key word a few seconds ago about being educated, going to the right sources. Why did Obama get reelected? A lot of low-information voters that did not do any homework and do any background and do any research just voted for Obama to get free things, to get handouts. There was no informed voters voting for him. There was a lot of these low-information voters. The key now is to be informed and educated.
Exactly my point. He got reelected because all the misinformation. Misleading our channels on media is misleading, and today they're still doing that. So people need to learn from what happened in 2012.
Exactly.
Don't trust what you see and hear on our media.
This is my question for you, and I agree with you. How can we be educated? How can we escape losing our freedoms and being deceived? What are the key things we can do, and what can the Glassoff gang and this petition we're talking about, how can this help us be educated and prepare?
Okay, number one, as I always said, please go get a copy of Quran and sit and read it. It will open so many doors, and it will give you so much deep information that you, and no, don't, please don't buy into the fact that Quran has been translated wrongly. No, there is a very good copy of a translation that I have read, and it's the closest to a real Arabic version of it. I'm pulling it up right now to give you the name of the translation copy so you can go get that one. Okay, it's called Sahih International. It spells S-A-H-I-H International. That version is the closest to the Arabic. It has absolutely no twist. It has not changed a word. So get that copy if you can. You can also find it online on Quran.com with a Q. Quran.com. Read the Quran. That's the first way of educating yourself, because when you read Quran, you will understand where this tikiya, hadith, no rights for women, all of that, you will understand them off Quran. And there's absolutely no way any of these radical Muslims can stand and say, oh, no, we're not based on Quran. They hold the Quran off and say, we are fighting for Allah. That's the very first step. If you have time, try to catch up with all the videos I put up about the Constitution of Islamic Republic. I can't say go read it because you can't find it anywhere. And if you do, it probably be in Farsi, hard to read. So try to catch up with my videos and articles that I put on my Facebook page. It's going to give you a lot of information as how an Islamic country constitution would work. And watch all of the episodes of the Glassoff gang and Jamie Glassoff, because he also brings in a different perspective of how politically it will affect us. And this petition, obviously, to my hope and wish, this petition, what's going to do for us is it's going to stop Obama, because that's the end of it. As we could get as educated as we possibly can, but as long as Obama is still in power, that knowledge won't do us that good. So we need to get educated, but at the same time, we need to work toward taking Obama down. I'm also working on some new pamphlets and brochures with more information, and I will start hopefully doing some rallies. Peaceful, obviously. You know, Randy, I'm all about peace. Rallies, and,
amen.
You know, as much as I can. I know. As soon as I said rallies, I have to say peaceful, because I don't want anybody to think I'm ever going to start shouting and screaming. Not my,
right.
Not my cup of tea.
But right.
I would say these are the steps we could take. And I always say it on my page, Randy, you know, if anyone has any question as far as how the Islamic rules are, what Quran says, woman right, anything related to Islam, send it to me and I will always answer your questions.
Okay, and this is important. I know that your public Facebook page is filled, so guide and direct us to the page that we should go to ask those questions and see your postings.
Of course. they can find me on Facebook. If they search my full name, it's a little hard, but I will try to spell it for you. It's A-Y-N-A-Z, and the last name is Cyrus. You can find me easily. Or you can go to Live Up to Freedom on Facebook. That's also my community page, which is easier to find. Live Up to Freedom. They can also go to my blog, liveuptofreedom.com. I have a lot of facts and information about the Constitution of Iran, and also all of my unknown videos on that website where I tell about my own stories in Iran and what happened to me and what I had to go through. And for information on the Glazov gang, they can find us on YouTube. Our channel is the Glazov gang. Glazov is spelled G-L-A-Z-O-V. And also on Facebook, Glazov Gang is the page that they can get all the information.
Well, there are the links. And there are the pages. We can be informed. We can keep up with the postings. We can know what's going on. I want to take the time to say thank you, Annie, for taking your freedom as an American citizen and educating us and fighting for the cause of freedom and standing up for our rights. We owe a lot of gratitude to you, the Glazov gang, for sounding the alarm and for educating us.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you, Randy.
And there you have it from Annie Cyrus, my special guest today on The Cross in the Desert. Thank you so much, Annie, and we will see you very soon again. Keep us up to date, and you're always welcome as a guest on my program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I will actually see you on the 25th. Sunday.
Yeah, thanks for yes, the 25th is a very special day. I've been talking about the special radio tribute to Rahane. And I said her name right, Rahane. And you will be a guest along with Mina Nefesi, who has a radio program in Los Angeles, Radio Shadi. And we will talk about Rahane. Thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. And before I go, Randy, as you know, I always have a problem with the chat room, but let me just say thank you, Kendra, and I can see Kelly's here. So thank you, Kelly.
Okay. God bless you, and thank you for your time today, Annie.
Absolutely, my pleasure. You take care, Randy. Talk soon.
There is a very passionate person. I really am glad that I became a friend of Annie's. She is so knowledgeable, and she's so accurate in what she says. And she is very passionate. And thank you so much, Kelly and Kendra, for interacting with Annie. I think that she is sounding the alarm in the right direction. She's not trying to cause rioting and upheaval. She's trying to educate us. And I'm just so thankful that an Iranian lady like Annie decided to come here for freedom, and now she's fighting for our freedoms. What a wonderful tribute that is. What a wonderful lady that she is, and so thankful that she was a guest today on The Cross in the Desert. Going to take a quick musical break with some brand new music from Matt Redman, and we're going to come right back for the last half of The Cross in the Desert. What a worship leader he is. So many of his songs are just so passionate biblically, and they really cause us as Christians to want to praise and worship God more. This last segment of The Cross in the Desert, I want to turn our attention to the children of Iran. This morning we've been talking about the children of America being deceived and indoctrinated by radical Islamic theology to change the minds and hearts of many of our Americans, to quash our freedoms, to change our worldview. I want to talk this morning about some very special people that, in light of this nuclear deal, that are suffering and hurting and need the financial backing that this nuclear deal will provide, but they won't see a penny of the money. And it is a travesty and injustice. And I'm talking about the children of Iran, the future youth of Iran, the young street children that suffer every day. And I'm thinking about this whole ramification of the unfreezing of assets, of the money, and where will it go? It should go to these suffering children in Iran, but instead it will go to the pockets of mullahs and for terrorism. So I found a way to make their voices be heard today and to talk to you directly about them. A couple of years ago, I wrote a blog about a situation in a school in Iran, and I want to read this blog to you to give you an idea about the children of Iran, and it's called Blinded by Religion. And on December 5th, 2012, a faulty heater exploded in the Shin Abad Elementary School in a tiny village of Piranashar and severely burned over 40 students. Quick to cover up their incompetence, the mullah's intelligence agents warned families to not conduct interviews with news agencies. It is a well-known fact that many of the elementary schools in Iran have worn-out heaters that desperately need to be replaced. A few days later after the tragedy, two of the young students died as a result of their severe burns. And if you see this blog, you would have to see it because I can only describe it. It's a picture of a young Iranian girl. I guess she's about 11 maybe. And she's holding up a burned hand in a hospital bed, and she's not wearing her hijab. And so in light of that, listen to this. Pictured here is 10-year-old Yagana recovering from her burns in a local hospital. When the mullahs saw her picture, he completely publicly complained that she was not wearing her hijab. Religious rituals and traditions are destructive and deceptive. The disease of being blinded by religion is a disease that can affect all of us. God desires mercy and compassion, and instead, many religious leaders fall prey to a system of rules and regulation that devalues and destroys human beings. During his earthly ministry, Jesus encountered the blindness of religious traditions many times when he met with the Pharisees and the scribes. On one occasion, the Pharisees complained to Jesus that his disciples were not following the prescribed Jewish hand-washing tradition before eating. Jesus immediately rebuked the blindness of the Pharisees and accused them of replacing the law of God with their man-made traditions. The Pharisees were obsessed with outward religious piety while ignoring the real problem, the sinfulness of their heart. Jesus pointed out their dilemma that they were busy honoring God with their lips while their hearts were far away from him. The real problem, Jesus emphasized, was the condition of the human heart. It's not what goes into your body that defiles you, Jesus proclaimed. You are defiled by what comes out of your heart. The point Jesus was making was that their religious traditions had blinded them to the real problem and had corrupted the true intent of God's law. Sadly, the mullah in Iran is much like the Pharisees that Jesus rebuked because of their religious traditions. Instead of showing mercy and compassion for the young burn victim, he was more concerned that she was not in compliance with Islamic law by not wearing her veil. How deep the blindness and deception. Yet, let's not be too harsh on the mullah. All of us can fall victim to the blindness of religion. We need to take seriously God's command and what he requires of us. Micah chapter 6, verse 8 is God's prescription that will keep us safe from this blindness. Quote, "He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God." We can be saved from religious blindness if we practice what Micah tells us by having a heart of mercy and humility. And that is the prescription. My good friend Paymane writes wonderful stories to tell us about what's happening in Iran. When she used to live there, like Annie, she was a firsthand witness to the problems of Iran, to the corruption, to the deception, to the blindness that I'm talking about. Just recently, I cannot mention a name. I've been asked not to mention a name. And I can't even mention the circumstances because that person's family could listen to this radio broadcast and could really cause problems with the situation. Basically, let me just tell you this. A very prominent person on death row and execution in Iran has been pardoned by the family. She has to come up with a great large sum of blood money. If that blood money is not raised within the next week, this person will be executed. We must do something to stop this. And so this means, even though I can't mention names, this means please pray for this person. Please pray for the money to be raised because they will execute her unless it's raised. And I wish I could tell you more, but I'm bound by secrecy. Paymane wrote something very important about this teaching in Iran about blood money. I want you to hear what she wrote so that you get more of an insight into just how religious tradition blinds the culture there in Iran and causes widespread suffering and death. Here's her teaching this morning. It's called Blood Money. That country is called Islamic Republic of Iran, the country with a regime who created many written and non-written rules and regulations, the country where the lawmakers are more strict than the real lawmaker, God. They make law according to Quran, a big part of which is a manipulated copy of the Old Testament, but they make bloody laws, and they never consider love. While God's commandments are all based on love, love God and love others. What does the Islamic regime do? This regime makes laws such as execution in different names, as well as the name of Jesus, and retaliation, raping in the name of Allah, torturing in the name of legal interrogation, amputation in the name of legal punishment as a lesson for society, and public hanging in the name of the achievement of Islamic justice. Iran is labeled as the country with the first rank of capital punishment, but it is not all the story of the country. The rank of corruption in other areas, as well as issues related to death penalty, is very high too. In Iran, the amount of four types of money paid by the victims of the corrupted law of the regime is huge, even sometimes endless: hush money, bribe, embezzlement, and blood money. But regarding that death penalty in any form and for any reason is condemned by the small team in this radio program, let's have a review on a type of death penalty called gesis. And let's see what daya, or blood money, is. Daya is blood money, or the fines levied on behalf of the victim or victim's family as compensation. Under the Iranian penal code, murder is punishable by qases, retaliation, or death. Murder by someone with diminished responsibility may be punishable by the payment of a daya, a form of compensation. In cases of premeditated murder, the family of the victim has the right to ask for their relative's killer. The family can choose to forgive the culprit and accept payment of diya, or blood money, instead. Once the rule said under Article 300 of the Penal Code, the diya for the first or second degree murder of a Muslim woman is half of that of a murdered Muslim man. Still, it's not all. If a Muslim man kills a Muslim woman purposely, and in the case that he is sentenced to death, that depending on who he is, the murdered woman's family must pay half of the man's diya, which is basically the price of 50 camels, before he is executed. Otherwise, the execution will not happen. The funniest part of the story is that if a Muslim man murders a non-Muslim woman, he will only be sentenced to 3 to 10 years in jail, not because of taking someone's life, but because of causing corruption on the earth. Once again, in the eyes of the Islamic regime, not all human life is highly valuable. Moreover, since the law dictates that virgins cannot be executed, there is widespread forced marriage between condemned girls and prison guards. Raping the girls before their execution ensures that their souls will not go to paradise. One report states, quote, after the execution, the religious judge at the prison could write out a marriage certificate and send it to the victim's family along with a box of sweets. All the rules made according to Islamic law, Sharia and Quran and Hadith, but they themselves change their own made valid and reliable rules and laws based on their holy book. That once again, it should be said, we, the team in this program, do not support at all. Unfortunately, this blood money has become a business for families of some victims. Although daya is a specific amount of money according to the law, apparently, recently, the Islamic regime allows the families of the murdered to assign the amount of the blood money. Yes, they assign a price for the blood of their loved ones. But sometimes the amount is so huge that if the family would work hard for years, they would never be able to pay it. Since prisoners are arrested, their families must spend a lot of money for them. In every small step of the imprisonment, they have to spend money. In order to see the prisoners, in order to send them food, clothes, other necessities, they have to pay a bribe. Sometimes they have to paw bribe to those who know judges. They have to pay a big amount of money for employing a lawyer, doing official work related to the court, finding the acquaintances of the relatives of the victims who claim they can help the prisoner's family to ask for forgiveness in order to use the helping hands of prison guards, even in order to get soldiers' help, the family must pay money. A lot of those people who promise to help get the money, and they don't help. They lie. Now imagine after several years of spending all the money a family have, suddenly the victim's family decides to forgive the murderer for a huge amount of blood money in a very limited time. And what happens? Another stressful procedure begins. The money requested by the family is so big that selling all the properties, including the house and the car, cannot help much. All of the city, all of the province, all of the country are asked to help. This is what the family of a young woman is going through these days. She is stuck between death and life. The family has sold everything they have, and the people in the country have tried their best to offer money. But the family has been unable to collect the right amount, only one-fourth of the requested amount. They still have to collect approximately, in American money, $33,280 to save the life of their loved one. The family of the victim can buy a comfortable house and make a good savings with this money and enjoy the profit of the money if they save it in the bank. While nobody knows how the family of the prisoner will live with a person who was under different physical, mental, and emotional pressures for years and years and will always have the nightmare of a rope around her neck. But two other problems will start in their life: living with a person who will surely be mistreated by society and may need time and medical and psychological treatment to recover after having been abused in prison and having paid back all the debts, all the money they had to borrow. And many families of victims ask for so much money, and many families of the murdered victims are never able to provide such money and have to say goodbye to their loved ones on the news because they are not wealthy enough to pay the blood money the victim's family has requested based on their amount. And still, the families ask the God of this Sharia law for help and justice. Do they ever ask themselves what basis of this law and what basis of it is really true Islamic law? Wow, I can't begin to imagine what this young girl is going through. I know who she is. I know her name. She has about a week. And the required amount that the victim's family has requested is beyond belief. And as we think about the money that the mullahs will put in their pockets after this deal has now been finalized, and you think of the children of Iran, and you think of this young girl who has been pardoned on death row but has an exorbitant amount of money, our God is able. Our God is completely sufficient and able to rescue this young girl. I remember when I heard about it, I rejoiced that she was pardoned, but I also was grieved that Rahane was not pardoned. But listen to me. Many people have said, what about prayers for Rahane? Why weren't they answered? Why is it that God did not intervene? Well, all of us struggle to understand God's will and purpose, and we don't always know exactly why. But let me make a suggestion to you. This young girl who has been pardoned, if they should raise the amount of money, what will life be like for her? She killed her husband. What will life be like for her with the victim's families and the friends of this husband she killed and the society that she lives in? Well, that's one possibility, but think of it this way. If Rahane had been pardoned, she defended herself against a rapist, which is what any woman would do. The man that she defended herself against was a prominent former intelligence agent in Iran. What do you think life would have been like for Rahane had she had been pardoned? The fact that she had killed a government man, what do you think life would have been like for her and her family? One possibility, is it not possible that our God, our great compassionate God in his infinite wisdom, knew what life would be like. And what did he do? He heard our prayers many, many times that execution had been postponed. God had his reasons. But is it not possible that our great God spared Rahana from even a greater suffering once she got out of prison? If we consider that possibility and we think through it very carefully, then maybe we can see that indeed our prayers been answered, that God knew what life for Rahane would have been like, and in his mercy, he removed her from ultimate suffering. If this is an opinion, and this is a thought, we pray and God changes history with our prayers. And sometimes our answers to our prayers is not what we would like them to be. But God, who knows the end from the beginning, did answer our prayers. I believe he showed mercy to dear Rahane. This Sunday, please join me for a very, very special tribute to Rahane as I read the dedications from my good friends, Iranians and Americans, that will be in the book. I'm going to read them on that very special day. And we're going to have a day where we light a candle in remembrance of Rahane. And we are joining our hearts and spirits with her family in Iran. When this program goes on, they will still be having their candlelight vigil too. So we are going to connect on this very special day. Please, please join me live or listen later. This is going to be one of the most important radio programs I've ever done. I need your prayers and need your support. Thank you, dear Kelly and Kendra and everyone in the chat room. Vito, all of you are so dear to my heart. Thank you for your support and joining me today. And I will see you this Sunday on Remembering Rahane, 9:30 a.m. God bless you. Have yourself a great week.
Glory, glory.